Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to another episode of Kotaku Split Screen. It is December 22nd, 2016. We are nearing the end of this horrible year. Today, we are going to talk about Nintendo's new mobile game, Super Mario Run, which is surprisingly fun. I think I like it more than most people do. We're also going to talk a little bit about some of the games we're playing, including Final Fantasy XV, Dishonored 2, and a cool new game called Shadow Tactics that Kirk recommends and will tell you all about. As always, we are excited to be here. Let's go. We are back for another episode, episode 60, the big 6-0. My name is Jason Schreier. I am here with Kirk Hamilton. Hello, Kirk.
Hi, Jason. 60. 60 episodes. Pretty good.
60 episodes.
Pretty good number of episodes.
Almost old enough for Social Security.
Yes.
And to join the AARP.
I like that generally we think of the number of podcasts as if it were the number of years old that our podcast was. I think that even when we had our 50th episode, I referred to it as our 50th anniversary, which is not what the word anniversary actually means.
No, not at all.
But yes, our podcast is now 60 years old. We've been doing this for 60 years. So
congratulations to our 60-year-old podcast. Welcome to another episode of Split Screen. Hopefully you are listening to this while playing Super Mario Run on your phone.
We are recording it while playing Super Mario Run. So
I just had to rip myself away from Nintendo's new Mario game, which I wish you could play it online because I can't play it on my subway ride to and, from work.
You mean you wish you could play it offline?
I wish I could play it offline without an internet connection is what I meant to say.
Right. When you in fact said the exact opposite of what you meant.
Yeah, which is, I wish I could play it without online.
Common mistake.
You know what I was just thinking about? I was just thinking about how Diablo 3 got all this controversy for being always online. But if that were released today, I feel like nobody would really care.
Yeah, did we talk about this on the show? I feel like I was just talking to somebody about this.
We might have been talking about this separately, offline.
Because, the way that the landscape has changed over the last few years has been really interesting. I think maybe we were talking about Hitman. It was when we were talking about that game, because that game is also kind of pseudo always online. Like, it's not actually always online, but it sort of is. They just patched it, so it's not quite as always online. Yeah. And there were people who were angry about it, but playing it, it was pretty clear. It worked very well as an online game, and it was just, there are a lot of games released now that are online. It is interesting how it's changed.
Well, it's funny, and back then, I guess now more online games tend to be more stable, but back then one of the big reasons everyone freaked out was because it launched and Error 37 hit, and nobody could actually play it. And then everyone was like, oh my god, because everyone thought it was because of DRM and piracy and cheating, and it was also linked to the auction house, the real money auction house, which was all sorts of problematic and caused all sorts of controversy. So people had this idea in their head that Blizzard was just trying to fuck people over.
It's funny. Funny too. I remember when that game came out. I think I wrote a 3-part, 2-year series of posts. The first of which being about why it was bad that the game was always online. The second one taking a look at the various always online parts of the game that were actually kind of cool, because there were things about that game that were neat, like that it was able to do because we were all kind of sharing a world. and have, of course, mercilessly gotten shit from a certain
dickish subset
headlines, of the internet.
One of the headlines is right. Like, yeah, we don't... what was it? Do you remember?
I don't know. It was something just like, maybe... Like,
this is why games shouldn't be always online, and then maybe it's a good thing if games are always online.
Yeah, and then, of course, you know, the articles coexist. But then there was a third article, I think, that I wrote finally a year later when they finally... I think that they... The game had just was kind of done, and isn't it? Can't you play it offline on console? I think that was the deal.
Yeah, on console.
And then it
yeah.
was an article that was basically just saying, look, in the end, this game did not need to be always online, because that's
right.
Despite whatever that allowed, it didn't really need it.
But we've gotten to a point where we've kind of accepted that in console games and PC games that mm-hmm. a game can be online and people aren't going to complain nearly as much. I can think of a few. Have there been any single-player games that are online only recently? Obviously, Destiny and The Division are two big ones.
Hitman counts because Hitman okay, isn't so really Hitman, a multiplayer
so
game.
So you can't play Hitman on PS4 without an
you
internet
can.
Connection?
So the way it you works, can. The way that it works is it used to be... And it used to be that you had two separate whole, like, save files and progressions. So you would, you would make progress and unlock stuff if you played online. But if you played offline, you wouldn't get any of that progress. And I think there are a lot of things that you just can't access if you're offline. Certain, I think, your upgrades or maybe even challenges in the levels themselves. But then they recently patched it, so a lot more stuff is available offline. And I'm not sure. I think it.
Okay,
I think
so this doesn't count. More.
But it was still. I mean, it was a single player game that launched essentially always online, even though you could technically play it offline as well.
All right. Well, anyway, the reason we're having this discussion in the first place is because Super Mario Online requires an internet connection, and that's not
you
unusual.
You just called it Super Mario Online, which sounds
jeez,
like...
Jeez, well, I cannot talk today. Super Mario Run.
I would definitely play Super Mario Online. The like Mario MMO.
That would be incredible. Like everyone, would it be like World of Warcraft style where everyone has a character that they
everyone
level
is,
up?
No, everyone is a toad. Nobody gets Mario. Mario is just the quest giver and you just have to make your own toad and you just pick a stupid color and that's all you get.
You get to pick the color polka dots on his hat.
Yeah, of your toad. And his dumb, there's a bunch of dumb emotes and horrible mm-hmm. toad noises that you can make.
Actually, that would be really fun. And you go around and you do quests killing Goombas with
yeah.
as Toad.
Yeah. And yet it's
you
somehow,
get different
because
weapons.
It's a Nintendo game, it's really fun and satisfying to just tap yeah. on Goombas.
It would be incredible. Anyway, Super Mario Run. So yes. It's not like unusual for mobile games to be online only. There are a lot that require an internet connection, but it's still kind of a pain in the ass for those of us who live in New York City and commute on an mm-hmm. underground tunnel with no internet connection. I think that's a very specific problem to me and people in New York.
Yeah,
though.
But I mean, it's also you can't play it on a plane. You can't. I mean, there are other
true.
Places that you can't play an always online game, and it's. You know, it's one thing when a console game is always online because, okay, most of us plug our consoles into the internet. But when a mobile game is always online, it is... I mean, there are plenty of times where I play mobile games where there is no network.
Yeah. By the way, side note, I just got an email saying, go see Assassin's Creed now from Ubisoft's mailing list. And that's the title of the email. And I just
oh,
responded like, no, Jesus
Wait,
Christ,
fucking
no.
fucking now, get a ticket,
why
go.
Would I do that?
What are you
why,
doing?
Why would
what are you,
anyone do that?
What
go see Assassin's Creed now.
It's supposed to be bad, jeez. Apparently. Gita and Mike both said it was bad.
Yeah, everyone has been saying it's
I
just
love
atrocious.
The idea that... I love the idea that Michael Fassbender was enamored enough of the Assassin's Creed lore that he's a producer on this film and apparently was mm-hmm. very excited to make it. That, as someone who has a deep appreciation for the absurdity and wonderful weirdness of Assassin's Creed lore, that really cracks me up.
Yeah, Michael Fassbender, big Desmond fan.
Really big, really big into the truth behind the ancient creator race.
The Animus. So, Super Mario Run, despite being an online game that you could not play without an internet connection, is surprisingly good. And I feel like I like it more than most people. Most people have just kind of played it for a little bit and dismissed it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been playing it a lot, and I actually really like it. It's really cool.
So... I'm curious, what is it? What I mean, I've played some of it. You've played more than I have. What is it you like
about
it specifically?
How much have you played? How much have you played?
I played through a few levels, enough to get the gist, but you know, not to see everything.
So, first of all, the levels are all really well designed. They're all clearly Nintendo A-Team levels, and you go through, and there's just a lot of good stuff in there. Despite the fact that you're not controlling Mario and making him run manually, there's still a lot of challenge and strategy, and you have to be able to figure out where the coins are. So the big thing isn't just... So to just beat the game is very simple. You just jump through, defeat Bowser a couple times, yada yada, game over. The real challenge comes to getting all these hidden coins that are in each of the stages. So they start off purple, and there are 5 hidden purple coins that are kind of tough to get in each stage. Some of them are tougher than others, and then once you get those, it moves to another color. I forget what the order is. It might be black and green or something like that, green and then black. But then there are three different levels, so purple, something else, and then something else. And they get increasingly more difficult as you get them, and really, really interesting and challenging. And you have to, it's like really satisfying, because if you miss a coin, because Mario keeps running, you can't just turn around and go get it. Mm-hmm. So you have to be really smart and clever and fast as you're doing it to try to get them all. And it's just really well done and really well designed. I'm having a lot of fun playing it.
It sounds like the kind of thing that you could blow through pretty quickly. I gathered from Mike's review, there aren't a ton of levels, and they all go pretty quickly. But like what you're describing sounds to me, and I've made this comparison before, but it sounds like Rayman Run and Rayman Jungle Run, which had a similar approach, and I got really obsessed with those games. I don't know if I'll have the time to do it with Mario right now, but it was very similar, where what you really wanted to do was get every single coin in the level, and to do that, you had to play the level a bunch of times and really get good at it. And I've already noticed in Mario Run, it isn't nearly as simple as just run forward and jump. There are all kinds of weird modifiers. There are these squares that when you step on them, you stop, and you can wait and time your jump, which is already big, and there are things that reverse
you. Control Mario and make him like stop moving, and there are a bunch of different gestures you can do on the screen. Like if you swipe your finger to the left, he'll like stop moving a little
bit. Right, there's these stylish moves. So it's funny too, I think we've talked about him on this show before, but Mark Brown, who does Game Maker's Toolkit, the YouTube channel, which is very good if anybody listens to our show, wants to watch really cool videos about game design. Mark Brown's channel is really good. He recently did a video. He's been doing a lot of stuff on Nintendo lately. He did a cool video about Nintendo's philosophy of sort of design from the core mechanic up. And the most obvious and famous example is that apparently they said they wanted Mario to be a game, the first Super Mario Bros. To be a game about jumping. And so everything in that game is based around the jump, which seems super obvious or almost boring to think about now, but it really, when you think about it in the context of games back then, the fact that you jump on enemies to kill them was a new thing, and it was only there because jumping was at the center of the game. So they said, okay, well, they're enemies, what do? Well, you jump on them, because this is a jumping game. So it's cool that all these years later they've made a Mario game where the only thing you can do is jump.
Right, it distills it to its core. It's funny,
and they still do
called...
so much creative stuff with it is, I think, really neat.
It's called Super Mario Run, but all you do is jump.
And then that is funny.
I think there's also a game called Sonic Jump.
Mm-hmm.
All you do in that is run. I don't know. I've never actually played.
That would make sense. That's Sonic's thing, right?
So Super Mario Run has not replaced threes as my commute game of choice.
Yeah,
which is
they're
what I play
very
every
different.
Day,
the flow of the games are very different.
The biggest difference is that I can't play Super Mario Run in the subway. So it doesn't even matter. And threes, I've just been playing nonstop since it came out, so I haven't changed
my habits.
It's kind
of your forever game. That's Jason's forever game, I think.
It is my forever game.
Threes.
I probably spend more hours playing threes than I have playing any other video game.
More than Destiny? There should be a time I've wasted on threes counter.
There is none, unfortunately. I can see how many games I've played and then kind of try to average it out based on, like, let's say it takes 4 minutes per game, I can probably figure it out that way. But there's no timer or anything. I would be very curious to see if I've played... I think I played more threes than Destiny, because I play threes roughly 40 minutes every day, because I'm on the subway for like 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the afternoon, and I'm playing threes.
I mean, I also think that you're playing threes for a substantial portion of your time playing Destiny with me. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, but that's just because you can't catch up to me, so I'm sitting there and waiting for you to like make all the jumps.
We're all doing a raid and
Wrath of the Machine.
Jason's half paying attention. Sorry, I was playing
Sorry,
threes.
Guys. I'm just playing. No, I think I'm usually just like doing stuff on the internet while
watching
while
football.
Destiny.
Yeah.
Yeah, watching basketball games.
And TV occasionally completely freaking out. And
screaming. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's good. I like it more than people's, like, the way people, than other people do.
It seems like I'm seeing more negative stuff. It's not clear to me what's going on. I'm using Twitter very, very sparingly these days, and so I'll just go on for a minute in the morning, and I'll just sort of take the temperature of all the takes that are just spewing forth from my Twitter feed and
check out the takes.
Yeah, just do a quick stick my finger in the take pool and then run away screaming. And I feel like I see a lot of people in games journalist circles sort of shitting on it or saying, oh, mm-hmm. it's not good or it's a failure. There's some weird headline about how Nintendo's stock is down because it's not selling. It sold like a jillion copies, right?
The funny thing is, well, we don't actually know.
I mean, of course, sales data, whatever.
No, well, this is the funny thing. So over the weekend, there were a bunch of headlines from various websites. There are a lot of websites that just will cover whatever analysts say, and analysts are often wrong because they're often just speculating or estimating or guessing. And in the case of mobile sales and mobile downloads, that's always the case. Unless the company gives out the data themselves mm-hmm. or unless it's coming from Apple, it's always guesstimated. So over the weekend, you saw these headlines that are like, analysts say Super Mario Run has been downloaded 10 million times, 5 million times. And the variety of numbers was just incredible. It was like one guy is like, this is 2 million times in 24 hours, 5 million times in 24 hours. And the numbers are all over the place. And then just this morning, there was some app estimate analyst, whatever, is like, we believe that Super Mario Run was downloaded 21 million times in the past 4 days. And then a couple hours later, Nintendo puts out a press release saying that it was downloaded 40 million times over the past 4 days. So it's like, what's a $19 million
difference? So it had been successful, surely. And you don't have to buy this game to download it, right?
The way it works is you download it and you can play the first three levels for free and then it asks you to pay $10, which a lot of people complained about because I don't think it makes it super clear that it's going to ask you to pay. And I don't think a lot of people are reading the text.
You can't just play it for free. It's really just a demo that you're downloading.
Yeah, okay. Yes, exactly. And nobody's like reading the bio description of Super Mario Run that says you will have to pay for this. Or
right. It looks like it's going to be free.
Or whatever. Exactly. So a lot of people complain about that. And then there's no way to know. Nintendo hasn't released the figures of how many copies they've actually sold of those 40 million downloads. Mm-hmm. So there's really no way of knowing.
So it just could be
4 million. It could be 20 million. It could be anywhere between. It could be anything. So I have no idea.
So sales stuff aside, the sense that I've gotten has been that people are sort of negative on it, or that at least, like, it just sounds like people are saying, and even Mike's review, he's saying, you know, they've gotten some of the stuff wrong because this is their first mobile game, so some of the packaging and communication is sort of weird. Apparently some of the other modes are kind of thin if you're not into the main mode, like the build your own Mushroom Kingdom thing, I guess.
Yeah, that one's stupid. There's and pointless. Yeah.
So it's it does maybe
gameplay itself
is good.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think it's a good game. I'm glad I spent $10 on it. I'm happy to have bought it. I wouldn't recommend it over other big Nintendo platformers or anything like that. But it's really good if you want something to play on your phone. And
yeah, I mean, and it's just been a long time since there was any mobile game that I felt very excited about. Like I feel like I played Imbroglio this year, and that was maybe it.
I got kind of bored of that game.
Yeah.
I like 80 Days was my big one.
Right, and that came out, I think, almost 2 years ago.
There's this game called Sorcery that I've been meaning to play but just haven't had time. It's supposed to be this really good text-centric RPG. It's made by, I think it's the same people who did 80 Days.
Oh, really?
Inkle?
Or is it using, or at least using Inkle, using that?
No, I think it's the same people.
Oh, wow, nice. Written by Meg Jantz, the writer? Is it the same writer?
I don't know. I don't know if it's the same.
Man, I would play any game that she wrote, so if that's the case,
it could be.
That would be awesome.
I think that's why I bought it in the first place. I remember buying it for like $5, and then the week after I bought it, it was like discounted to 20 cents. And I was like, God damn it, why did I do that? But anyway, yeah, it's been a bad year. I mean, Threes is just the default mobile game that everyone should just play forever. Sometimes I close my eyes and I just see the Threes number. numbers moving, which is
that's the there's a term for that, I think, when the game kind of makes its way into your subconscious.
I think the term for it is going crazy,
right? Losing your marbles,
losing it entirely.
Do you think because Nintendo is making other mobile games, they've said,
yeah,
and I think we have enthused on this podcast about how Animal Crossing would be an extremely good mobile game if they do it right. Do you think
So the ones they've named are Animal Crossing and Fire Emblem.
So do you think based on Mario Run that they'll learn from it and maybe do some of the... Because it seems like Animal Crossing is going to be very open to microtransactions and they're going to have to really get that right. But if they do, it could be amazing. So do you think that they're going to get it right?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
What they showed with the Super Mario Run is that they don't want to do the whole exploitative free-to-play dynamic where it's like, we're going to give you this game for free and then charge you an arm and a leg every time you want to do anything interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why they've been slammed by critics in the mobile space for not going after them and for doing this $10 payment thing. Because if you look at Pokemon Go, the reason that was a huge success is because it was free.
Right.
And people could download it and I mean, forget the fact that it was just a terrible game, and I'm sure everyone in it at Nintendo, like, can you imagine Shigeru Miyamoto? I wonder what he thinks
Being someone who makes a mainline Pokemon game.
Yeah,
and I mean, just like, thinking, oh my god, so many people are going to think Pokemon is bad after playing this.
Yeah. Although it did, I'm sure, drive.
Yeah.
Pokemon Sun and Moon were the most popular Pokemon games.
Yeah,
to date,
I'm sure that that's not the dominant emotion that you feel if you work for the Pokemon company looking at Pokemon Go. I'm just sure it's kind of there underneath. Oh my god, we made the most popular game ever.
But so I do think that an Animal Crossing game could be really good. I'm trying to envision what it would be. So like you open up a thing. Would it be like
I would hope it would just be an Animal Crossing game. Basically,
okay,
you would go to a town and you would do all the Animal Crossing stuff on your phone, and then you could go visit a store where you could buy things, and you could visit your friends' places, and you could share. You know, I honestly just think it would be cool if it were a straight up Animal Crossing game on your phone. I don't really see, because there's no interface issues with Animal Crossing, you know, that couldn't be worked out for a touchscreen in the same way that
Mario
game. And then
they just sell cosmetic items.
Yeah, it's all. And then I think you would just be able to buy cool custom items, which I'm sure a lot of people would do. That's the kind of microtransaction that I would probably do if I got into the game.
Yeah, that could be really fun, and it's a lot more likely that people will be visiting each other and maintaining
And that was the thing that really got me into New Leaf, was visiting other people's towns, and like hosting other people in your town was so cool, that whole aspect of it. And then going to the Happy Home Showcase and just looking at random other people's houses, it was just great. It was such a thinking, just wow, someone came up with this incredible thing or did this really cool thing.
That really
got its hooks into me.
So I would be more excited for the Fire Emblem mobile game.
If it's good.
I imagine the big focus of that, and this is just me guessing, but I imagine it would be a competitive play. So you're playing online against other people.
Do you think you'd be playing in the way, the sort of asynchronous way that you would in, like, where you just take on their squad?
Yes. Yeah, and then you get a push notification. Hey, Kirk has taken a turn. And
what's
then
the game? What's the game I'm thinking of? It's an old mobile
Words
game.
Words with Friends.
No. It works like a tactics game. It's a tactics RPG. Someone will remember the name. If you're listening and you know it.
Final Fantasy Tactics.
No, but it was basically just purely designed for competitive play, and you would trade turns with people and play against them. And you would have like a team of, you know, two archers and a knight and a mage, and you'd pick your team makeup, and then you play on a grid, and it's just you pick your turns. And it wasn't like you were actually playing against other people. You would take a turn and it would send, you know, like Words with Friends. That would be cool too for Fire Emblem.
Yeah, that would be that smart. Mode. And then you recruit. Maybe there's a single player game also where you recruit your dudes and.
I'm wondering. I feel like if these mobile games are generally not going to have the scope of a full game, that maybe the Fire Emblem game would just be the multiplayer thing, and it wouldn't have any real story. Like it would.
But how would you recruit your army?
That's a good question. Maybe you would recruit them through some kind of winning games mechanic, or you could,
or maybe you pick them up. Maybe you kind of draft a selection of, like, at the beginning of each match against someone.
Right.
You pick,
and that actually would
four
make it
out
more
of
fair.
10 units or something.
Mm-hmm. That would make it more fair if you just, as you level up, unlock new teams and new people, so that everybody has access to the same, like, the same.
But
teams.
How would you make them marry each other?
That's the question, and then right, and then is that going to even factor into a mobile game? That's
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So what other properties would you want to see Nintendo bring to mobile outside of the ones they've announced already?
Man, I don't know. I mean, Animal Crossing would have been my big one, and they're already doing
that. What about
that.
Zelda? Would a Zelda mobile game be good?
Sure. I mean, I think any Nintendo game could theoretically be good, only because they have a lot of smart people working there who come up with creative things. I don't know if Zelda... Like, I've played this is my day for forgetting game names. The one that's just like Wind Waker, that's on phones. I played some of that, and it's just a Zelda game in all but name, made by somebody else. And that kind of game doesn't do much for me on mobile, only because...
Is that Oceanhorn?
Yes, Oceanhorn. That's it. Cool. Didn't forget that name after all. Thanks. Oceanhorn. And it's just not that... The rhythm of that kind of game doesn't work very well for me, at least, on the phone. I like something that's shorter and more bite-sized and, you know, lends itself more to quick stops.
Yeah, also the act of moving around a 2D landscape or even a 3D landscape and hitting a button to press a sword, it kind of loses that tactile gratification when
never
you don't
work.
Actually
and
have
I think
a button.
These games will, I mean, I think most games now do work with controllers if you want to use one of those controllers that plugs into a phone.
Yeah, but nobody does that.
Right. So,
come on. Who the hell is going to, like, if you're going to carry around a giant controller accessory, you might as well just bring a 3DS around.
Yeah, exactly.
Capcom just announced that they're releasing all the first six Mega Man games on iOS and Android, which to me seems crazy because those games are so tough and precise that playing them with touch controls just seems like a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah,
they're hard enough on 3DS with real controls.
It's funny because I remember there was just the whole period of time when people were starting to release, like when Gameloft was releasing that God of War knockoff.
Oh my God, yeah.
So long ago. Yeah. And there was this whole conversation that was an interesting one of basically, can touch controls ever be right? And I remember every game that came out was billed as, oh, this is the one. We finally got it right. And there would be, it was this interesting little mini space where people were innovating in interesting ways. Oh, now the joystick goes anywhere you put your thumb down, so you don't have to put it in one area. And now, these kind of ideas caught on. But in the end, it just didn't, you know, especially traditional third-person controls just don't really work that well, at least for
me. The ironic thing about this whole conversation is that Nintendo made touchscreen gaming a thing way before Apple did with the DS and the DS's touchscreen.
Though then again, the DS had buttons, and I can't think of a single... Like, the closest thing is The World Ends With You.
There were some games that... There were some games that didn't let you use the buttons.
Yeah,
like
I know,
Zelda,
and I never liked
Phantom Hourglass. Yeah, and they weren't good.
Right, so
I hated the Zelda games. Yeah,
which is where I was going with that. Really, I didn't like. Like, they may have done it, but they didn't. Isn't there a Rhythm Heaven game where you have to use this stylus, which is a mess and just not at all?
I think Elite sometimes Beat Agents.
In the Phantom R, the Ghost, whatever it's, the Phantom Detective, Phantom Ghost, whatever it is, game, the music game that I'm forgetting. This is this podcast
Rhythm Thief.
Phantom Thief, is that what it's called?
Rhythm Thief.
That's it. I think there were
Yeah, you're just off your game today.
I'm off my game.
Comes to remembering names
today. I'll just start making up
your game name names.
I'll just make up names. I'll call everything Destiny. So in that 3DS rhythm game Destiny, you have to. I think that you have to use the stylus summon. It sucks because the stylus is not good for that.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I would want to see Nintendo put on the phone. I would want like a turn-based Mario RPG on the phone, but really we just need a good turn-based Mario RPG in general, mm-hmm. no matter where it is. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. I keep thinking that so I didn't play the Paper Mario game this year, and I also didn't play Tokyo Mirage Sessions, which I was just thinking about because a lot of people that whose opinions I respect have been raving about that game and saying Jason, you have to play that. It's this incredible JRPG. But I just don't want to play a Wii U game.
I'm similar.
I mean, really first of all, I think Amanda bricked my Wii U, so it doesn't even work anymore. But also, I just have no interest in turning that thing on again. So I hope they bring all these games to Switch, and that's part of their strategy is re-releasing all the games that people might have missed during the period mm-hmm. where nobody bought their console.
Well, I would imagine that's going to be even more likely for someone isn't Tokyo Mirage Sessions, that's Atlas, right? Like an outside publisher or company would
I think it's a Nintendo game.
Really?
I think Isn't Nintendo...
It, I thought it was like Fire Emblem related or something. Or is it just Fire Emblem
It's a
related?
Mixture... Well, Atlas is Shin Megami Tensei, so it's
right,
Shin Megami Tensei.
But it's not
Tensei
like a crossover or anything like that?
No, it is. It's a crossover between Fire Emblem and Shin Megami Tensei, but Nintendo published it.
Oh, okay. Well,
so it's their game.
Oh, okay. Never mind then.
Yeah, so they can bring it to Switch, and it would be smart of them to bring mm-hmm. it to Switch.
Yeah, I can't remember if that game had any essential Wii U stuff, but I don't believe it really did.
Yeah, I don't know. But it would also be smart of them to do mobile releases tied to their big game releases. So, for example, it seems like there's going to be a big 3D Mario game on the launch of the Switch, and we'll find this out in a couple of weeks when they do their whole big blowout mm-hmm. in January, which is them releasing the all the info on the launch lineup and price and yada, yada, yada. But I would think that Super Mario Run is just trying to pique people's interest in Mario for that release, makes sense.
That's the loose, non-specific tie-in, the same way that Pokemon Go kind of got people excited about Pokemon, and then
right.
Sun and Moon came out, and anyone who wanted could buy it. They could also do more explicit tie-ins, which could be interesting. Ugh,
like Ubisoft games where it's
check
the companion app.
Or they could have...
find these treasures.
Or just have...
What if in the new Zelda, you don't have a map, so you have to open up your map on your phone in the companion
app? See, that's...
No
companion apps. Companion apps,
no. Companion
no.
apps.
But something...
Remember when that was a thing? Remember Smart Glass?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, it was a whole thing. I remember there was a Smart Glass app for every Xbox One launch game.
Well, and that was a requirement. That was
we
a Microsoft
supposed, yeah,
requirement.
They made them, and so we were supposed to use them and talk about them in our review. I feel like I was reading back over my Dead Rising 3 review, and there's this one paragraph in there that just is something like, there's also a Smart Glass app for this game, which I didn't really try out. It's just this really lame, perfunctory addition, just because it was this thing at the time that was sort of so touted as part of the game that I felt like I needed to address it in the review, which is really funny looking back. Like, now would I ever mention a companion app in a game's review? Who cares?
No, never. Also, it's funny you bring up Dead Rising 3, because I feel like Dead Rising 4 came out and nobody gives it one shit about it, and then everyone just moved on.
Yep.
I don't think I saw one person talking about that game.
No. I was uninterested in it, I think, after I heard the name. I think I found out that it had Frank West, the photographer guy, in it, and that's all I know about it.
That's all. Yeah.
I mean, it's in a mall again, I think. But yeah, it is.
And
funny.
It got mediocre, bad reviews.
Yeah, not supposed
just
to be
like
great.
Piddling reviews. I remember hearing at the time when Xbox One was launching that Microsoft's producers would go around and they'd have all these index cards that were these are all features that have to be in your game.
Yeah.
Cloud support, smart glass, always online, Kinect.
And it was especially funny because, if I recall correctly, all of those launch games were made by non-Microsoft studios.
Right. Well, so that's what I'm saying. I'm saying these Microsoft producers went around to all the developers that were making Xbox One games and were like, these are the things you have to hit. And the developers were all like, what the fuck? I don't want to make a fucking Kinect support
in my game. I remember Rise, Son of
Rome,
which Crytek made. I remember that game had Kinect shit in it where you would have to yell when you wanted them to fire the trebuchets or something, and it was so dumb. You were yelling at the game while playing. It was like kind of fun for a dumb game.
You had to? Can you play that game without Kinect?
In the end, I think that they made everything playable without Kinect. That was also a rule. I don't think Kinect has ever been required, unless it's a Kinect
game. Right, except for Kinect games, right. It's funny you mention Rise, because Crytek has been in the news this week. I'm sure you saw that they just shut down 5 of their studios after many months of delayed payments, late payments, payments.
Maybe they could work that stuff out before they make people do a bunch of work for no pay, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, this is the second time this has happened also in the past 2 years. We're just like if I feel terrible for all the people at Crytek, but I was going back through old stories and looking at the history of Crytek, and it turns out in 2012 or 2013, their CEO, Shavat Yearly, was telling people and saying and making headlines saying the future of Crytek is free-to-play games for the next 3 to 5 years. We're only going to make free-to-play games. And man, that just was the worst bet they could have possibly made.
Right? They made Warface. Right. That was their big free to play game, and then they sold it to somebody. Right? Somebody bought it.
Well, that's
them.
A rumor now. That's the rumor now.
Okay. But they made Rise. They made The Climb for Oculus. They've kind of made a bunch of.
This is after Rise. It was after Rise, and it was just them saying this is our future plan is to commit to free to play. That's how we see ourselves. And I remember at the time hearing that from developers there being what the fuck? What is going on here? This is not okay. Including the people who were making Homefront, The Revolution, the Homefront sequel at Crytek UK. And there were some people working on Rise 2, which was ultimately canceled. But it was just so bizarre for a company that at the time had 9 studios and 700 people to just double down on free-to-play. if you're a big company and if you look at all the successful game publishers, they all do what any business should do, and that they diversify. So a company like Activision has its hands in every single pot. It's making big premium shooters. It's making an MMO shooter hybrid. It's making free-to-play games. It's making console games. It's making PC games. It's doing that's what a company needs to do. It needs to diversify. You can't double down on one single thing and hope that it works.
Especially something like free-to-play, something as ephemeral,
something
as
volatile. As free-to-play, where if you're free to play and you're not one of the giant hits, then chances are slim that you're going to make enough money to be able to pay your employees. And I suppose that's what happened, which is sad. So yeah, that's a bummer situation, but it seems after closing those studios, things are on the upswing for them, and I wish the best to those people who are still there, and hopefully they all get paid soon. In other video game news, Kirk Hamilton has been playing video games.
That is
which is always exciting.
I think I saw that headline on Kotaku yesterday.
Kirk Hamilton playing video
games. Kirk Hamilton plays some games.
Yeah. So have you been playing Final Fantasy 15? Is that
a little bit of Final Fantasy 15? I've mostly been playing 2 stealth games. I've been playing a lot more Dishonored 2, and I've also been playing a game called Shadow Tactics: Blades of the Shogun. Mm-hmm. Which is really good. Both of those things are really good. And I also played a little more Final Fantasy 15. So
wait, one thing at a time. Let's start with Dishonored 2.
Why don't we talk about them all 3, and I'll just say separate sentences about each one, and you have to guess which game that sentence
Please do
is
that.
About.
Try to do that. Okay. Let's see how that works.
I stabbed a guy from stealth but got spotted and had to reload a quick save.
Final Fantasy 15.
Definitely Final Fantasy 15. Okay, seriously though, Dishonored 2 first. So they added New Game Plus to this game, and it's really good. I wrote about this for Kotaku and have been sort of obsessively playing New Game Plus, and I really like that game. I think it's really,
I really,
really
like
good.
The Jindosh lock. I just want to play an entire game that's just those puzzles.
So that was the kind of turning point for me. So this thing, also something I wrote about, but for listeners who don't read Kotaku, I guess, there's this point in the game midway through where you come to a door, and it's locked by Kieran Jindosh, who's the great sort of genius of Karnaka. And it's locked with one of those LSAT logic puzzles where there are 5 women at a meal and you have to figure out who's sitting where and who wore what and who had which heirloom and who was drinking what. And you kind of, it gives you, you know, so-and-so was sitting on the left. The woman in red spilled her wine, and, you know, and it tells you these kind of, all these variables, and you have to figure it out. So I picked up my save at this point and had kind of forgotten what was going on. And I knew this was not, this had to be optional, but I kind of just got to it right after loading my save and just thought, okay, fuck it, I'm going to solve it. And so I first started thinking, okay, this will be fine, I'm good at these. And then I was like, oh no, this is hard. And I wound up having to really, it took me a long time, like, you know, filling sheets of paper with this huge grid that I made of all the information.
Well, because the hardest part when you're trying to solve this puzzle is figuring out how, what to write down to solve it.
Right. That was the real challenge for me, was that I started out, it's easy to write all your affirmatives, the things that you know, because it gives you like five facts, but there are so many variables. There are five variables per woman and five women. So that's a lot of variables. And you have to, a lot of the information you have to infer is based on, you know, the woman in white didn't drink beer, for example. So you have to find a way to write that information down in a way that's like sortable and consistent, which is much more difficult. So yeah, it took a long time to just figure out how to organize the information. And then once I did, oh man, it was so fun. The gradual process of thinking, okay, wait, I got you. I know where you were. And then you just kind of watch it come together and then entering it into the lock and the door just opens. And I got an achievement for that, which is apparently a much sought after achievement, because there are all these other ways through the door. You can go even find the answer. There are people who cheat. I guess you can go find the answer inside and then reload your save and use the answer on the door, because the thing is, it's randomly generated. It every time you read it in a new game, it populates it with all new variables. So you can't just Google the answer, which I think is great. Yeah. And like speedrunners have had to work out a whole method for solving it really quickly so that they can get through it as fast as possible. Because if you do that way and solve it quickly, you bypass almost the entire level and just go straight to the next one. Which
I wonder if Dishonored 2... Sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, sure. But
I wonder if Dishonored 2 would have fared better, like, sales-wise, if it had been released the way Hitman was, where it's episodic and they released it.
It would have required
levels.
A completely different approach to the design of the game. I mean, yeah,
I've
had the thought while playing it.
The reason I ask that is because I keep thinking, I keep wondering why people didn't buy it when it's this incredible game and a sequel to it, an incredible game. And there was just clearly this lack of interest across the board.
I think that it's a combination of things. I think that the aesthetic turns a lot of people off, actually. Like, I think that it's really bloody and gross and kind of just dark and, like, outsized and ugly. And I think that that just doesn't really attract people. Like, I think it's a really striking-looking game, and I like the art style, but it's not something that, like, advertises very well. It looks really grim. It's just sort of a weird wailing song and then some blood everywhere. It just is, So there's that, and it's also just, it's a niche kind of game. I mean, it's this, especially for me, the more I put into it, the more I get out of it, but it doesn't come to you, it's not immediately satisfying. You could kind of blast through it in a few hours and think, ah, that was all right, and, you know, but what I've been doing is, what I was going to say is, right after the Gin Dodge puzzle, the next mission in this game is the one that they showed at E3, so I'm not spoiling it by talking about this, but it's another time travel game, like the one in, or time travel mission, like the one in Titanfall 2, where you can hop between timelines at will. So first off, it's totally wild that two games had missions based around the same thing, where you get this special tool that lets you jump between timelines. And it's even cool. Honestly, it's really cool in Titanfall 2, the way they do it, because it's so focused and the way that it like layers on top of itself is really good and it's really slick. But in Dishonored 2, it's the Dishonored 2 approach, where it's really open-ended. And it's so, dude, it's so cool. It's a really cool mission. You can, you get this thing at the beginning. You walk into this big mansion that's basically abandoned and overrun. And then the guy who is your target basically is there playing the piano, and he's crazy and he's just rambling. And the stranger turns up and he gives you this thing that lets you suddenly go back in time to the night that he and all the conspirators sort of met to plan the coup. So you're jumping between this past period and the present, and in the present it's very much like Dishonored, like Titanfall, where in the present there are dogs and there are kind of other hazards and blood flies and zombies that you have to worry about, but the place is basically empty. And then in the past it's totally well lit and cleaned up, and you can get through some doors that you can't get through. It's just the same kind of idea. Also, though, you can press a button and the thing you're holding, this fan, comes up on it, And the fan shows you the other reality as you're walking around, which totally changes the dynamic because you're sneaking and you can basically pop it open so you can see the guy you're sneaking up on in the past timeline and then press the button and appear right behind him and like pick his pocket and then press it again and like warp back to the present. It's so good. It's really good. And then,
man,
it just, so the levels are very cool. And then there are some other really good ones all the way toward the end, which is great. But then New Game Plus, which they added in a patch to this game, and I think that just went live 2 days ago, but it was on PC a little earlier, is just like, it was an essential addition. And the fact that it wasn't in the game to begin with is, I'm hoping.
So the New Game Plus lets you play as one of them and then Emily or Corvo and then use both of their powers.
So, right. So you carry over your runes and your Bone Charm abilities, which I've now gotten really into, and you can pick either character, and you get access to all of their
powers. Does it make everything
harder? You can play on any difficulty. So as far as I can tell, it's the same. I'm just playing on higher difficulty.
Okay.
And playing more this way, because I'm now playing as Corvo, but with a combination of abilities, and I'm just killing everybody. Like, I don't care about going non-lethal, because I played... Like, my non-lethal Emily playthrough took, like, 25 hours, and I'm already halfway through the game as Corvo playing lethally, because I'm just wrecking shit, because it's so fun. Man, first off, it runs good for me on PC, which is, like, a little thing that it didn't when it launched, and so now it's just really nice to play the game at a steady frame rate. Because now that I'm doing all this action stuff, you really kind of need the performance to be there. But man, it's fun. It's just, it's better than the first game in that respect because you have all these other cool new abilities. And I'm so overpowered, especially you can craft runes, and I've just crafted runes to where my guy moves as fast as the Doom guy and just is totally unstoppable. But it's super fun, and I've just been having a total blast going through it. And you can just keep doing New Game Pluses as well. Like, if I finish this one...
So you played stealthily the first time, and now you're just running through and killing everybody?
No, I'm playing stealthily, but I'm just having a lot more fun just looking down at a group of five guys and be like, all right, I'm gonna go fuck shit up, and just figuring out a really creative way to like dive in and just start killing people.
Yeah, so my problem is whenever I pick it up, and I've actually had this experience where I've loaded up the game intending to play for like 20-30 minutes and then I just play once and die once and then stop. Mm-hmm. My problem is that I want to play in such a perfectionist way that I just don't want to fuck up at all, so I just let myself die if I get caught at all.
Yeah, and I mean, I did that more toward the end of my first playthrough for some reason, and you know, that's a fine way to play. Like, I get something out of that.
No, but it's frustrating. That's the thing. It's frustrating when I play that way, but it's also frustrating to kill someone and then feel like I could have done it better.
So, right. Which is what's nice about New Game Plus is I really just feel like I'm accumulating power, because on like New Game Plus 3, which I probably will get to, I'm going to like try doing a playthrough with no powers.
Kirk, most people don't have this kind of time.
Well, okay, but I'm just so I mean, you know. That's fine, but this is how I play the game.
Okay.
But you know, it's like I'm seeing it as just, I don't care anymore about the story, because the story is just these little non-animated cutscenes anyways, and there's not, like, it's not a big deal. I've seen the story. I mean, I know that it's a thing that changes. It just doesn't have an effect on me anymore. So I just have been able to let go of that thing you're talking about, which has been very nice. Because, and then just to push the game and see how far it'll go and what kind of weird shit happens. I don't know. I was recently playing and the AI will fight itself, which I actually hadn't fully realized. Because I'm getting spotted more and disrupting the AI's patterns, and it'll chase me somewhere, but then I'll escape. AI characters wind up in places they're not supposed to be, and then get in fights with each other, and like really weird shit happens where, you know, one character will go kill four other characters for me and stuff. It just is very, there's a very, the level of emergence that they built into the air that they built the game to support is really cool. So yeah, if you liked that game at all and are playing it, I highly recommend it.
Have you been looking at all at the gameplay footage for Prey?
I saw the one trailer and thought it looked awesome. Like that,
it looks. I mean, it just looks like a sci-fi version of Dishonored.
Well, it looks kind of like System Shock, right? Because you're being hunted by monsters. Kind of
right.
Was the sense
similar.
I
mean.
You're never really being, you're always the hunter in Dishonored.
Yeah, that's true. But it's the same type of like, here, we're just going to give you this playground full of things to do and tools, interesting tools.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. And I'm really excited for that game.
Yeah, it looks really good. I really hope it, comes together, because I agree. It looks good.
But yeah, no, that's cool. So you think Dishonored 2 is a Game of the Year candidate?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's grown on me quite a bit. I, you know, it's, really is a shame that it launched kind of fucked up on PC, because I think that defined a lot of the narrative for it, for me, but for a lot of people. Just people will say, look, you know, I think PC Gamer gave it Game of the Year, and there were a lot of people saying, really? That game was so fucked up. But the thing is that it's a really good game.
It's so good.
Yeah. And I get that. I think that's fair, judging it on its merits. Yes,
it's
absolutely.
It's funny that Dishonored 2 got a New Game Plus this week, and Final Fantasy 15 also got a New Game Plus.
It doesn't make
week.
Any sense, the New Game
but
Plus.
But the one in Final Fantasy 15 is just totally useless. It's
right.
Like...
Right. Are you sure? Is it possible that the, you're missing something, or that there's
no, I was looking it up. I was looking on people's like forum threads and stuff, and nobody's. So basically what happens in the new game plus for Final Fantasy 15 is you carry over all your levels, all your equipment, most of your core stuff, and none of the enemies change.
And
so
nothing else
you
changes.
Just play the same thing over and over.
So
I guess
weird.
It's if you want to play the story again and see the story without having to do anything, I guess. The problem is, so usually New Game Plus in a JRPG is useful because it's turn-based combat, so you can make battles a lot faster by just grinding, like quickly zooming through everything with higher level, like Chrono Trigger, for example.
Mm-hmm.
To get all the endings, you would want the New Game Plus so you could go back and play through stuff really quickly. But with this, it's kind of pointless because the action battle system makes it so you still have to pay attention and you can't just grind through enemies by holding down a
right,
button.
Well, and
the
level, I mean, and the level, the leveling differences in that game are weird, which we've talked about before. But
right,
just
sometimes
this...
there will be enemies that.
Yeah.
Well, but no, but when you're level 62 and you're playing
okay.
through the main
yeah.
story, you'll
yeah.
just crush
everything.
But there's
definitely some uneven in this.
But yes, 100%. I think the reason they did this, first of all, I think that they're kind of scrambling to just like read forums and then be like, oh, this guy said we need this, so let's get this in with stuff like New Game Plus and mm-hmm. like everything else. A lot of their development of this game has been very reactive. But also, I think it's so when they add the new cutscenes and stuff, you'll be able to replay through the story with your higher level, I guess.
That
I don't know.
It makes no sense
to me.
It's definitely weird. Just considering
why release. So why not just add a harder difficulty mode so you can play? Because
right.
it's still just normal and easy. If they added hard, that would make a lot more sense.
My guess would be that maybe, like the thing I'm already noticing playing it the first time is that the leveling is very odd and the difficult, like the various difficulty spikes, and it just doesn't feel like it's all really consistent. And I would imagine
that problem isn't solved with New Game Plus.
Well, no, right. And that if you wanted to increase the difficulty of everything, it might be a lot harder to do that than you think, only because it's already kind of weird and all the numbers are weird. So you can't just multiply everything by two. You know, it's kind of, which would just probably
ruin something. But they already do that
for
normal and easy.
There is normal and easy? Oh, there's an easy mode. That's right.
Yeah.
Well,
so
yeah,
it's not like unprecedented. They could also find ways to. I mean, I don't know. They could instead of starting the entire game as new game plus, you could choose to start from different points.
You know, and I mean, even thinking about it, it's probably easier to make a game easier. like it's like even a weird game with weird numbers to make it easier than it is to make it harder in a way that's still fair. So I could still see that being a problem.
Yeah, I don't know. I just. Don't see the point of them releasing it right now.
I'm glad that they released the extra cutscenes. It's all so vague to me now.
No, they haven't released those yet.
Oh, they haven't? Okay.
No.
I thought that it said that there were more cutscenes in this patch.
No. That was the previous patch. That was the day one patch.
Oh, okay.
The day one patch added stuff, and I actually got this while I was reviewing it. That added like scenes from Kingsglaive into the game, which we talked about.
So you saw
those. Yeah, but no, that was before the game.
Oh, okay, I had misread the patch notes. Okay, so I still that's frustrating then. That means I still
this patch is literally just New Game Plus, no point.
And oh man,
I still think you should. I know. So you stopped? Did you get to Altitia, or you stopped right before?
No, I played a little bit tonight. Altitia is huge. It's like a labyrinth. I'm so confused by it.
Yeah, it's actually surprisingly small because there isn't a lot you can do in it.
Yeah.
But it's cool. I mean, you should explore, and I'm sure you noticed the frame rate dips.
I'm playing on a pro, so I don't notice it as much.
Oh, really?
I think that maybe it runs better.
So don't you think that's one of the most incredible cities you've ever seen in a video game?
No. I think
like
it's
visually?
Cool. I think it's cool, but it's kind of... Like, it's... So far, anyways, I felt kind of disoriented by it, I guess. It just feels like a lot of corridors, and you can't really get anywhere. Like, compare that to a city in Assassin's Creed or something. Yeah, but I mean, compared to a city that you can actually interact with and get around. Like, an Assassin's Creed city... is far more impressive to me because it's actually like a space that I can traverse, where Altusha is just a series of lines that I can go down. Are a lot of dead ends, and it's very confusing to me sometimes how to get from one place to another. It's really cool looking and definitely like a huge Final Fantasy town, but I'm actually not wild about it. But I only played some last night, so
keep,
I don't know.
Keep playing. I don't think you should wait for the new cutscenes, because those could be many months away. So I would just keep playing it.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And also, I think you should try to finish it if you can. At the point you're at, I don't think it'll probably take you 5-6 more hours to finish it. Like, you could do it on a Saturday. I would do it before we start our Game of the Year deliberations, because I think the ending is really important to see before you decide one way or another how you feel about it. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who haven't read Kotaku before, our Game of the Year is different than other sites because we don't really believe in picking one Game of the Year, which is kind of a stupid concept. So instead, we just make a list of our 12 favorite games of the year, which feels like a more appropriate way of honoring the games we loved without having to say, compare Super Mario Run to Overwatch, or like Threes to Uncharted 4.
Yes. I like that this is, we're now concluding the section of the podcast where Jason tells Kirk to finish a JRPG. I'll finish it if I have time. There's a lot of other stuff that I also need to check out.
This one won't take you as long as all the other JRPGs.
I also trust you to enthusiastically argue on behalf of Final Fantasy 15 in a convincing way.
The interesting thing is I keep going back and forth on that and putting Final Fantasy 15 on our list, because it's such a flawed game and it's such a messy, like, disjointed game with so many issues, so many friggin' issues of that game. Mm-hmm. But I rewatched the ending and it's such a gut punch, and it's such a, this game more than anything else I've played in a long time is just like so much greater than the sum of its parts. And I think I tried to capture that in my review, which is that this game just like the way it captures this feeling of these four brothers going on this adventure, and you just fall in love with them, and they make up for all the messy parts of the game, at least they did to me. And just watching that end set of scenes hit me like a truck. So I might fight for that. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
It's going to be a fun chat. This game should be a Game of the Year contender. Another weird game that was released in December is the other one I mentioned, Shadow Tactics.
Shadow Tactics?
Blades of the Shogun. It's really good, man.
Tell me what this is.
So it's a game like Commandos, if you ever played Commandos. It was an old PC strategy game, and there's another game. Oh, hey! In keeping with the theme of this week, I am forgetting the name of the other game. I think it's Desperados. I never played it. It's the other game that was just like Commandos. Commandos was my game. I think a lot of people listening will know Commandos. So Commandos is a real time strategy stealth game where you played this sort of diverse group of, you know, badass sort of A-team type commandos, and you would go behind enemy lines. And that's what Shadow Tactics is as well, only it's set in feudal Japan, and you have a team of sort of varied, these, I think, six people in total, sort of varied soldiers, and you do these infiltration missions. And you have a different team makeup each time that's dictated by the game, not by you. So maybe you'll have, like, the ninja and the sniper guy and the samurai. So the ninja can jump up onto roofs and he can drop down onto people and he can kind of move pretty quickly and he has a throwing star. And the samurai guy is like slower and bigger and he can't jump around, but he can kill three dudes if he like rushes out and gets them really quick. And the sniper can only shoot from up top, but he's kind of useful and only has a certain number of bullets. So each person has their own distinct abilities, and this is a sort of isometric top-down strategy game. And then it's interesting because it's real time, so it's different than something like Invisible Ink, which was turn-based, also really good, or XCOM 2, which is more combat-y and also turn-based, or XCOM. So it's real time, which is really interesting. And man, it's so fucking good. It's such a good game.
What makes it so good?
It's just extremely well designed. I haven't played a ton of it. I've played maybe I don't know how many levels. But a few.
And this is PC? PC
it's
only?
On PC now. It apparently works with a controller, which shocked me when our friend Adam told me that. He's like, yeah, I've been playing with a controller and it works pretty well because it's got a million, you know, buttons and is very
complicated. But I don't know. You're still not telling me on why I would play this over XCOM.
Well, so the way that it works is... you have to make your way through a very hostile level, and it's very difficult. If you get spotted, you're in deep shit. So you're constantly quick saving and loading, just because you lose very quickly if you get spotted. So what you'll do is you kind of have this team of people with each one with a unique set of skills, and you have to kind of queue them up in various situations and problem solve your way through a whole lot of increasingly complicated scenarios. Like, you know, this one character, I think her name is Yuki, she's a little girl, and she can summon people. So she can whistle, and they'll come right to where she whistled. So she can also leave a trap. So you leave a trap and whistle, and one guy goes around. Meanwhile, you have the ninja sort of go around to the right, and he's hiding, waiting for the one guy to come around so he can jump down and kill the other guy. You can queue up one action apiece for everybody. So you kind of queue up all of their actions and then hit enter right at the right time. And your team kind of goes into this perfectly choreographed thing that you'll probably fuck up a few times as you work out the correct solution. But then when you finally get it right, it's so awesome because they just perfectly execute. You know, she tricks the guy and he goes around and the ninja jumps down and takes the dude out. And then the samurai comes from behind and like takes out the last two guys who are standing. And then suddenly everybody's down.
I see.
And then you move on. And it just... So that part of it is really cool. Also, surprisingly cool story and setting. You can play the game with Japanese voice dialogue and written subtitles, and which works really, really well. And it just is this cool historical setting. And the characters so far seem really neat. There's a lot of... It seems like there's actually going to be a story where the characters interact with one another and get to know one another.
How much have you played?
It's really cool. What was your question?
How much have you played?
I don't know. Three or four missions, I guess. So
okay. That sounds really neat. It kind of reminds me of like Lost Vikings, where all three characters have... Did you ever play that? The Blizzard
yeah,
game
and I know that game. It's different, but I see what you, like in that way. It's
well,
similar.
In that each character has its own abilities, and you have to kind of figure out
or
ways
the cave,
to have
like
them
the
work
cave
together.
Had that approach, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's very that, which is cool, and it's cool that you don't. I was expecting something a little different. I thought you would get to pick your team build up before each map. But you don't. It tells you. So each one is very carefully designed to work with the, you know, you have these three people this time.
Interesting, yeah.
And I don't know if you actually ever have everybody at once. Maybe you do for one big, you know, big throwdown. Uh-huh. But that also means the story can be more interesting. Because I'm guessing, already from what I'm seeing, it seems like there are going to be times where someone, you know, gets captured or injured or, like, betrays somebody else and leaves. And they kind of aren't around for a couple of missions. And it gives them that freedom to kind of actually tell a story.
This
so
sounds
far,
like a game I would love to play on my phone, by the way.
It wouldn't work on your phone, probably. Only because it's real time. If it were turn-based, it would. But real time, it's pretty hard.
Too hectic, yeah.
Requires a lot of just sort of remembering, oh shit, wait, which button? Like, I'm still mastering the controls, so there's a lot of just, you have to move right in this window when this guy went around the corner, and if you don't, you know, you blow the whole thing, and that would probably be pretty frustrating on a phone. Mm-hmm. But it's good, man. It's a really good game. It's been a crazy year for, like, PC strategy and, you know, like, PC-centric types of games, and it's cool that someone figured out, basically, oh, yeah, like, no one's made a Commando-style game in a long time, and those games were really good. Let's just make one, and then they totally
did. Yeah, but I feel like nobody is talking about this game except for you. Like, this is the first time I've heard
about it. It's gotten a fair amount of play, I think.
Oh, really?
On PC, like, Rock, Paper, Shotgun's writing about it.
About it on Kotaku.
Luke wrote about it for us. He covered it already, so we're covered.
Don't tell Luke. Nobody listening to this should tell Luke that I didn't read his article about Shadow Tactics.
You should read Kotaku, popular snack food Destiny fan site, Kotaku.com.
I should. I need to get my Destiny fix. Go to Kotaku.
It is. I think the name also hurts this game. I think Shadow Tactics.
That's a terrible name.
And it just needed something punchier and not Shadow Tactics Blades of the Shogun, though. I think that it's got, you know, extremely glowing Steam reviews and is really, you know, the sort of core niche group that it's appealing to has discovered it and is into it.
They should put it on the 3DS or the Switch.
It would work. I wonder if it'll be on consoles, given that it's got controller controls that apparently are decent. It wouldn't surprise me if they ported over.
Shadow Tactics is tactics. Well, yeah,
good game.
Maybe should we check it out for a Game of the Year contender?
That's the thing. It's the thing with December, man. Like, I'm trying to get through The Last Guardian because that game's cool. Yeah. And then this suddenly, out of nowhere, this really, really good stealth tactics game drops on PC. And I'm just like, Jesus.
It's really ridiculous. More of these games need to come out in July and August where we're all, like, looking for things
to
play.
Or we need to not do our Game of the Year awards in December. But
well, I mean, that's... The end of the year. Else are you going to do Game of the Year awards? Mm-hmm. We're actually later than most sites have already run theirs.
I know.
We are the only ones who actually wait until the year is over.
Which is, it's funny because it's such a little, like, it's that's the best we can do. Like, it's wait another couple of weeks, but it's
still exactly.
Something. I mean, it does give me a chance to finish these games, but that's why, you know, I'm having to make some tough calls with where I spend my time right now.
Yeah. I do think I'm generally proud of Kotaku in a lot of ways, but I think we really do Game of the Year right in terms of not picking one Game of the Year and in terms of not doing the bullshit like breaking it up into genres and not and waiting until January.
I would love to know what Kotaku's best downloadable game of 2016.
The thing that I really hate when people do is like most anticipated games. And I mean, I guess I get the appeal of being like, oh, we're excited for this game, but in practice,
also,
it always winds up being the same game every single year.
It would be moot for us because it would just be Persona 5. The most anticipated game for Kotaku is obviously Persona 5.
But it would be Persona 5 in 2014, 2015, 2016.
That's true.
And 2017.
Yep. Like where last year everyone gave it to Horizon.
Exactly. If you go back and look at all these websites, like IGN, GameSpot, whatever, it's always like most anticipated game, Persona 5. If you actually go back and look at 2016's most anticipated games of the year from last December, you will see Horizon, Mass Effect Andromeda, Zelda was a big one everywhere, Persona 5, what else? South Park, The Fractured But Whole. That's already like,
I honestly don't. I mean, I don't like that category just because it's not... It just is. It's so different than all the other awards because it's for things that don't exist.
It's awarding trailers.
It's basically like best ad campaign is what it is.
Best marketing.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. But also it is funny how often, yeah, it's like Red Dead Redemption 2. Can't wait for that to not come out next year.
Can't wait for that one, not make it. But we're getting dangerously close here to stepping on our own predictions
episode. And stepping on our own Games of the Year discussion.
Games of the Year.
Which that'll be next
week,
right?
Yeah. Cool. So we should wrap things up now. Next week we will be coming back with a gigantic podcast.
Mega episode.
Unless we break it into two. Part of me wonders if we should break it up into two and release
it. We'll record the whole thing at once. We can discuss logistics. The most important
next week
thing,
we will be going through our annual tradition of revisiting, talking about every single game of the year.
Oh man, I'm so excited.
It'll be intense. And then we're going to do a mailbag episode and our predictions for 2017. Those will be our January episodes.
Yep.
Our first couple of weeks of January. And also, if you guys were looking ahead to 2017, we have a couple of guests that we would like to bring on the show. If you have any suggestions for guests, send them to splitscreen@kotaku.com.
Mm-hmm.
If you have any questions that you would like to see included in our mailbag when we run it in January, send those to splitscreen@kotaku.com. If you have any fan fiction of Kirk and I or fan art of us, send it to splitscreen@kotaku.com.
We'll include that in the special fan fiction reader mail episode.
Yes,
we'll do that for Valentine's Day.
I will not promise that we'll read out fan fiction, but maybe. You never know.
Anything could happen.
Mm-hmm. Jinx. And with that, I think that's it. Any other final thoughts before we call it for today and look forward to our next week extravaganza?
Nope. Well, I still didn't talk about controller under buttons, but we can talk about that next week.
Oh my god.
One of these days we're going to talk about
it. And your obsession with controller under
buttons. They're so good.
Every time, they're the best. But I like that's such a weirdly sexual thing.
I know. One of the best things about
them. Oh, yeah, the under button of the controller. That under button.
We're just
going to
keep listeners in suspense about what I'm talking about and why I'm so excited about them. And finally, in March, we'll do the under button blowout.
The under button episode.
Yep.
Next week on Kotaku Split Screen, controller under buttons.
Are they good? Are they bad? Let's find out.
All right. Goodbye, Kirk.
Yes, bye.